You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Hello, this is Destiny Best. I'm 14 years old, and I am an eighth grader at Manchester Academic Charter School.
Hi, my name is Trey Morris. I'm 12 years old, and I'm a seventh grader at Manchester Academic Charter School.
Hello, my name is Ryan Jones. I'm also a seventh grader that attends Manchester Academic Charter School.
Hi, my name is Crystal Smith. I am a 13-year-old who also attends Manchester Academic Charter School.
Hello, my name is Sahara Rahim. I'm 12 years old, and I attend Manchester Academic Charter School.
And you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Today, we have our principal here, Mr. Henderson. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, sure. My name is Dennis Henderson. I'm the principal of Manchester Academic Charter School, the middle school building.
All right. And how are you doing today, sir?
Doing great. It's good to see you guys here on your day off to honor Dr. King in a way really exemplifies what he wanted to see, young people taking control and being leaders. Great job, guys. Proud of you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We know you had an altercation with the police. Can you explain what happened?
Sure. I wouldn't necessarily call it an altercation. There was did have an incident regarding a civil rights case involving the Pittsburgh Police Department, which my civil rights were violated, according to District Attorney Zapala, in which I was falsely arrested. The charges were dropped because of my civil rights were violated. And again, this is along the lines with the legacy of Dr. King, in which making sure that we understand that we do have civil rights and helping us stay protected under the civil rights that exist.
Oh, I would like to ask you, when you faced discrimination, can you describe your feelings during that situation?
During that time, it was a couple things. I mean, of course, you know, frustration. Anytime you feel like you're being treated wrong for no reason and you know you didn't do any crimes or you didn't cause any problems, you're just going about your daily life and being treated differently. Of course, there's some frustration. There's disappointment to be arrested. There's an embarrassment. You know, so there's a lot of things that go into, you feel demeaned. There's a lot of things that go into it that actually demean you as a person. So that's really what I was going through, and especially in my role in working with students. It really plays a big part in just who you are as a role model. That's not what you want to represent, is being arrested or anything like that. So it really undermines you as a person.
So, as you said, you had many feelings going through you at that moment. How did you control those feelings, knowing that you're a role model to many students and many people in your community, so you wouldn't set a bad example?
Actually, the fact that I do work with so many young people, that is what helped me keep my control of myself, knowing that I didn't want to lose the opportunity to work with young people, and also knowing that there was actually kids out there, whether I'm in a school or not. I mean, I always got to conduct myself as a role model. So that played a big part, which I'm grateful for that, because I know if any point I would have lost my temperament or got out of line, even though it was unjust, the reason I was stopped and the reason that I was arrested, if I would have lost my composure, that would have validated the actions of the police officer on that day.
What was the outcome of the situation?
The outcome, it was twofold. It goes to a civil case. I wound up suing the Pittsburgh Police Department, and it's not so much about money. And that was the biggest thing with the lawsuit. Didn't want to go to court for money, but the way a civil case is, it's a monetary case. So fortunately, we was able to settle before it went to court and actually had more opportunity to get things accomplished that I wanted to see. We were able to put some new policies into place in regards to keeping data on people being stopped and frisked or arrested by police officers. We were also able to get community meetings together with the police department. So there are quarterly meetings now in every community with the police department. And there was also more dialogue going into place as far as just educating the community about their civil rights. One reason rights are violated, especially by low-income or under-educated communities, is the fact that people don't know their rights. So it's easy to take advantage of someone if they don't know what their rights are. So also making more emphasis to educate the broader community about their rights.
So as one of your students in the middle school, you've kind of made it a point to teach us all of our rights, and we've read more like the Constitution and stuff like that, and we know more stuff. I think like maybe there's maybe other areas that do not go that deep inside of your rights. I remember we had like a whole couple of weeks in social studies just for that, and just so we know what we're allowed to do and what is wrong and what we shouldn't let happen to us.
I hope you guys can answer this. Whenever you're trying to make your case, what is ARE?
A is assertion, R is reasoning, and E is evidence.
Yeah, and just those basic things, you know, even when it came down to it, within my personal life, I had to be able to assert where I came from with what happened to me. I had to be able to, not aggressively, but clearly define what my issue was. I had to provide the reasons as to why I made that assertion, and I had to provide evidence. And this is something that I ask you guys to work on, because that is something that will take you through your life. You guys participate in mock trials, debates, things of those natures. Again, that's all develop your skills so that hopefully as young adults and adults leaders in the community, you guys can be agents for change and betterment for the community.
Being around students all the time, how do you think this impacted them?
Students could actually answer that better than me, but hopefully, you know, they realize that the things that we talk about do apply to life. We could discuss it all day, but it's another thing to actually see it in the practice. The kids that were actually there, the incident first occurred and throughout the trial, they are now off to high school. But many of them kind of looked at it as an opportunity to see our court system in action and our justice system in action. And they got to experience that firsthand all the way through, which was very enlightening for them. I know you guys, I think, were still in fifth grade at the time when it first started, or fourth. Yeah, so the other group, they're in high school now, and they do always speak highly on that experience of going through that with me.
What was your biggest goal during your situation? What did you want to accomplish?
Initially, again, you don't expect that situation to happen. But what I did want after this had happened was two things. For one, to be arrested and you having your picture all over the news in handcuffs sitting on the ground, that was not the image that I wanted people to know me for. So that was first and foremost. Secondly, I didn't want to be known as a victim of police misconduct. I'd rather be a point in which we advocate for education and further discussion, but not being a victim. And that's one thing, my biggest goal is never to go out as just a victim, but an agent for improvement.
How do you feel like this impacted your family? And I know you have kids. How do you think that impacted them too?
That was another real big thing. You know, at the time, I want to say my daughter was in fourth or fifth grade, and she was in summer camp at the time. So there was a lot of dialogue going on, and she knew something happened with her father. She knew he was arrested. And again, I know that had to be an embarrassment for her, in which people was talking and asking questions during the summer camp. But at the same time, I look, once all said and done, and she, you know, start really understanding, it actually made her a lot stronger too. You know, we had real discussions that got pretty deep, you know, at a young age for her, which kind of broadened her perspective on things. Whereas, you know, I like how she perceives the world. You know, nobody has a vendetta against police officers or anything like that, but the reality is that we live in a system or in a society that is not equitable. And at a young age, she got to really see that firsthand, and we had that discussion at a young age for her. So it actually made her a little bit more mature when it comes to understanding the dynamics of people and between people. One of the big things I wanted to do as a parent was I didn't want her to walk away from this experience or my experiences bitter, because we need our police officers. We need you guys to become police officers. So we don't want to have no wall. And I think my daughter did pretty much walk away with a good sense of who she is in the society around her and her place in society, and knowing that she has power to change things.
Do you feel like you did change something in the system?
I feel like I dropped a grain of sand, but there's so much work to do. You know, when it comes down to it, and this is why I love working in education, because I know that I'm just one small piece. And as we sit here and talk about Dr. King, we'll call him a big rock on the beach. I'm just a grain of sand, and each of you guys are grains of sand. So, you know, it's a continual legacy for me to teach you guys to continue that movement of civil rights, or just our society being just for all.
Do you feel like this has impacted the way that you teach your kids today?
Yes and no. The only reason I say no is because I've always, I mean, for the last 9-10 years, I've been pushing law-related education within the schools. Since I was a child, my family, my parents, my grandparents, they ingrained in me the civil rights struggle. So I've always walked around with this within me, and that's always been my motivation to educate. So it's not so much that it changed me, but it might have amplified what I believe my purpose has always been in education.
Was that your first big encounter with the police?
When it comes to that scale, in which it was blasted all over the media, yes. But unfortunately, again, you know, when you grow up in impoverished community that is highly policed, and this is why I think I was able to deal with it with a certain level of maturity as well, because I've seen police use excessive force numerous times. It's sad to say, but it's not the first time that I've had encounters with police that were unjustified. Before, I might have been younger, didn't really know what to say or what to do, and I was just a victim then. But, you know, as I got older and more knowledge and a greater foundation of who I am, it makes it a lot easier to be able to combat injustice.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Leon Ford.
Ain't gonna let nobody load it. Turn me round, turn me round, turn me round. Ain't gonna let nobody load it. Turn me round, keep on.
Hi, I'm Trey Morris, and I'm in the 7th grade.
Hello, my name is Destiny Best, and I'm in the 8th grade.
Hello, I'm Ryan Jones, in the 7th grade.
I'm Crystal Smith, and I'm in the 7th grade.
Hello, my name is Sahara Rahim, and I'm in 7th grade, and we all attend Manchester Academic Charter School.
Now we would like to interview Mr. Leon Ford. Hello, Mr. Ford.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor to be speaking with you all this afternoon.
It's an honor to be speaking to you, too.
All right, so Mr. Ford, we know you had problems with the police, and so how do you feel like you are discriminated against?
You know, I would say in other communities, in a lot of communities that are predominantly African-American communities, the way the police interact with young black men and women is different than how they interact with predominantly white communities. And, you know, the night that I was shot, unfortunately, I was targeted, you know, because of the color of my skin. I can't really go into the facts of my case, but I can say that, you know, I was targeted because of the neighborhood that I was in and the color of my skin oftentimes. As young black men and women across the country, we are targeted because sometimes they say we are in high crime neighborhoods or just because we are black. And it's something that we've been fighting against historically for a very long time. And yeah, I know today is, you know, Martin Luther King Day, and it's one of the things that he fought for, you know, with the civil rights movement, was that individuals would not be judged by the character of their skin, but the content of their character. And unfortunately, that is still relevant today, where some individuals are targeted because of the color of their skin and not the content of their character. And even if you are a good person because of the color of your skin, you can be targeted. And that happens a lot within police force, even not just here in Pittsburgh, but across the nation.
Thank you. For those who don't know, would you like to give a summary of what happened to you?
I was unjustly shot 5 times by a Pittsburgh police officer on November 11th, 2012. I was 19 years old at the time. And after that night, I realized how serious issue the police community relations issue was. And I kind of used my voice to speak for many individuals, you know, around the country who aren't able to speak for themselves. There's a lot of different names that, you know, we speak about when we talk about police community relations. I just wanted, you know, individuals to know that, you know, it can happen to anybody. And that's why, you know, we have to collectively support each other and stand up for what's right, healing this relationship between communities and police departments.
What do you think has to happen for discrimination to stop?
For discrimination to stop, I think it's an inclusive issue. I feel like human beings in general, we have to learn to coexist with one another. We have to learn to respect different individuals' life experiences. We all have different life experiences and, you know, different perspectives that we're entitled to. It's just finding a common ground to share those perspectives and understand each other as we coexist and make this world a better place. And I'm very optimistic that this can happen and it's going to happen. And even when I find myself in conversations with the tough conversations that we call courageous conversations about race racial prejudices and racial equity, these conversations that I have with even some individuals from other races that may have a tough perspective about Black people or from around some Black folks who have experienced negative things with white people. It's this owning your perspective, being confident in your perspective, and finding like-minded individuals to, you know, help each other heal through our experiences. I think that's, you know, one way we can do it. And I think, you know, that's a way, you know, that my life experiences have proven to work. I'm a student at Duquesne University, so I do a lot of work on campus there. And with some students, you know, there's some white students that I work with who have had little interactions with Black people because of where they come from. However, we're able to sit together and have these courageous conversations about life experiences and learn each other and learn to love each other and coexist. And I think that's important when we're talking about ending discrimination.
How did this situation affect your family?
It was hard on my family, and I think it still is hard. I've kind of learned to adapt to my circumstances. However, they're still hurting. They're so used to seeing me walk around and doing things that, you know, I've done all my life. And now, you know, I'm in a wheelchair, so that's like a big change. They understand the trauma that came along with me getting shot and facing time in prison. So, yeah, it was definitely hard on my family. However, we are resilient, and I believe that we're able to overcome any adversity that's thrown our way.
You didn't let your situation be just spoken by the media and all the news. You took your situation to your own hands so other people can know your story, and you've went to different places telling your story to let people know what actually happened and, like, not let the media maybe get something wrong and let everybody's opinion be off that. What made you take a stand against that and made you, like, want to tell your story for yourself?
So I understand the power of words, and I understand how the media works in sound bites. And you could take, you know, one sentence out of a speech and it changed the context of whatever an individual said. I understand, you know, the way people word things, how people phrase things, how it could change the context of someone's story. And I wanted to tell my story my way. So I started to share my story my way. Even outside the media, there are some influential leaders within the African-American community who could have told my story for me, like they tell a lot of the other victims of police brutality. Like, they tell them stories. But I didn't want my story to cause division. I didn't want my story to be the same story of police brutality. I wanted my story to become a story that brings people together, that builds bridges, and to be a story of healing, to be a story of love, compassion, and understanding. So, you know, having the ultimate goal of my story, bringing healing and peace to the world, I knew that there was a specific way that I had to tell my story. And no one else at that time was able to really see the direction that I wanted to tell my story. They wasn't able to see how I wanted my story to impact, to have a positive impact on society. So really I had to, you know, use social media platforms to find innovative ways to tell my story. And doing so, I was able to project the way I view myself on society. And in doing that, society started to see me how I viewed myself, and that was as a positive influence and an individual who was able to overcome adversity, an individual who's fighting for humanity, and not just an individual who was a victim of police brutality. Of course, police brutality is a huge part of my story. However, I see the bigger picture, and I'm not defined by that moment. I just use my story and my platform. And I want to encourage, you know, young people and just people in general to understand the significance of telling your own story, especially with all the different social media platforms and podcasts that's out there. I mean, there's so many different ways to tell your story, and there's power in telling your story. And in telling your story, your own story, I found from my personal experience, find healing. There's healing in telling your own story. And it's like therapy. It's inspiring to others. And, you know, it's inspiring through my experience. It's been inspiring for myself as well. So I find strength in telling my story. And tell your story and find innovative ways to use a platform and your voice to have a positive impact on society. And, you know, I cannot, again, stress the importance of telling your story.
We heard that you're publishing a book. So what made you write that?
So my book is called Untold. And, again, it goes back to, you know, owning your story. I understood the significance of my story. And there's been a lot of individuals who say, yo, Leon, how are you still happy even though, you know, you were shot 5 times and, you know, you were facing jail time and, you know, you lost your little sister and you've experienced all these negative things in your life. How are you still positive? So I wanted to, you know, to tell my story in a way that could inspire people, tell my story in a way that can help people heal from any type of adversity that they were faced with. And I do a lot of speaking engagements. However, I can't speak, you know, in 100 places at one time. But, you know, from my understanding, having a book where it gives a lot of people access to my story at the same time to learn about my process and how I've dealt with adversity and to learn from it. And I think it's important for individuals all ages and different, you know, races and different genders to read my story and think about how I've overcame adversity and how the reader can apply these lessons to their lives and overcome adversity as well.
For people who are just tuning in, we're talking to Mr. Leon Ford. Mr. Ford, I see you now as like a public figure. So do you feel that you impact today's youth?
Yes, certainly. So when I was, you know, in middle school, eighth grader, you know, like you all, I remember doing Black History Month projects and learning about different leaders. And although these leaders were African-American, I could relate to them to a certain degree. But as a young man and the way a lot of institutions told the stories of these leaders, I couldn't directly identify with a lot of these stories. So I just tried to be as humble as possible, be as open and transparent as possible as a leader to connect with young people so that, you know, we can understand that we all have the same story. I have family members coming from where, you know, you guys come from, and we all have similar stories. Again, that's another tying back into owning your story. Sometimes when other people tell our stories, they tell our stories from their perspective, and we kind of miss our target audience. I'm very intentional about letting people know where I come from and what I've been through to become a role model to young people to say, hey, this is what I've been through, and this is how I made it through it, and this is why you can do the same thing, and you can be great as well. Also, you know, overcoming the societal limitations, the societal barriers that's oftentimes placed on us when we go through certain things that we go through. You know, I think it's important that we continue to tell our stories and not only become mentors, but become, you know, role models in our community. And a role model is somebody who is positive, somebody who has a positive impact on the community, doing the right thing. I think, so you guys are in the eighth grade, you guys are role models. You guys are, you know, on the radio right now, and you are doing something positive. So there's someone somewhere looking at you guys saying, yo, I want to be on the radio. I want to interview someone, and I want to have a positive impact on society. So it's not something that, you know, being a role model is not something that you have to wait until you're a young adult to become. But, you know, it's something that we all embody, whether we embrace it or not. And it's something that I have embraced.
I thank you, and we have one last question. You've told your story through many platforms. Like we recently said, you were writing a book, and you've also told your story through social media. What else would you like to let people know? Like, what else would you like to get across?
Have you guys ever watched Pay It Forward?
Yes,
I have.
Yes.
All right, cool. If you haven't watched Pay It Forward, I think it's an amazing movie. And maybe you can encourage one of your teachers to let you watch it at school. Basically, Pay It Forward is a movie about this 6th or 7th grade student named Trevor, and they were doing this project at school about how they can positively impact society. And Trevor came up with this idea to pay it forward. So he said, I'm going to give 3 people something big, and then they're going to get 3 people something big, and then it's just going to multiply and multiply, and, like, we could change the world with this. And in this movie, you know, he says he gives people something big over and over and over again. And from studying this movie, what I realized that the young man, Trevor, when he said he was going to give something big, from my perspective, he was giving out of 3 things, and that was love, compassion, and understanding. And for me, that was big, and I said, yo, man, I'm going to pay it forward. And, you know, I want, you know, I'm going to pay it forward and live my life from these 3 principles. I'm going to give out of love, compassion, and understanding. I want to encourage other people to give out of love, compassion, and understanding. And that's how we can change the world. You know, even if you are faced with any type of obstacles, any type of adversity, if you focus on the 3 principles, love, compassion, and understanding, it's a road to healing. And I just want to focus on healing my family, healing the community, healing the city, and then, you know, healing the country, and then healing the world. And, you know, with you guys' help spreading this message of spreading love, compassion, and understanding, I feel like we can make, you know, not only our neighborhood or not only Pittsburgh a better place, but we can make the world a better place.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fort, for your time, and we're appreciative for your knowledge.
All right, thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate your time.
Jackson, Mississippi is a mighty white town. White folks like to keep the black folks down. They think they'll be all right, but there's gonna be a fight, and they'll have to share that freedom crown. Yes, they'll have to share that freedom crown.
Hi, my name is Trey Morris. I'm in the 7th grade.
Hello, my name is Destiny Best, and I'm in the 8th grade.
Hello, I am Ryan Jones, and I am also in the 7th grade.
Hi, my name is Crystal Smith, and I am also in the 7th grade.
Hi, my name is Tahir Rahim, and I'm in the 7th grade. And we all attend Manchester Academic Charter School.
All right, I have prepared a poem for you guys. Okay, it's called Separate But Equal. They said we were separate but equal. Is that really true? Did they get hurt, beat, and battered to vote? Is this what they call equal? I don't know. I don't want to see what's not. We were blasted with hoses and hounded by dogs. And this was equal, sure. The law said we are free, but it was not that easy. Sure, whites were threatened by all these blacks freed by slavery, but they did not have to show it through violence. There are other ways to show it. Word of mouth, speaking in public. Heck, you could even write a letter. But violence solves nothing. Don't we know that by now? Okay. Not all white people were racist, but a vast majority were. They hanged, slaved, and blatantly disrespected us. I get nobody's perfect, but seriously? Segregation did not help this matter. It made whites feel like they are more than or superior than us. How is this equal? They clearly accomplished a separate part. The bus, for example. Whites in front of blacks. Whites in the front, blacks in the back. Because this was fair. We even had to give up a seat for a white person. Of course this was equal. We couldn't even look a white person in the eye without going to jail or getting in some type of trouble. We even had to sit in a smoker's car on the train. Sure, we're moving on up with the civil rights movement, but did you know that it was considered rude to fight back towards a white person, even in self-defense? Of course, but this is separate but equal. Have you ever heard of Brown versus Board of Education or a girl named Ruby Bridges? She helped the civil rights movement. Segregation was not really the answer at all. Did it work? No. So here we were again, separate, but not equal. Did you know that every single one of us has an ancestor from Africa? They even tried to hide our history so that we should embrace and be proud of. Most of our history that we know of are white, the first president, and a whole bunch of other people. There are many overshadowed black national heroes. So are we really separate but equal? Slam, snap, snap.
I'd just like to say that that was really good.
Thank you.
So as you were writing that speech, what was going through your mind?
Well, I actually wrote the speech because it was like a school thing and we had to, it was a contest and I won the contest. But as I was going through my mind, I was like, we were so separate but equal that people got in trouble for defending themselves. Rosa Parks went to jail for defending herself. And she was in the right part of the bus. Like, she was already in the back of the bus. The white person wanted to sit there. The white person gets what they want. Or else. And or else was her going to jail. So that wasn't fair. And I felt like this is so overshadowed that people don't know what's going on or they're not informed of what's going on. And I felt like people need to be informed of what was going on through this times. And it's still going on now.
Okay, we also watched a video in class where it was blacks protesting at a restaurant, and in the newspaper they put black gangbangers protesting with violence when there was no violence really occurred.
And also in class we watched the movie Selma, and we saw a lot of violent events. For one, there was a teenage boy in a diner and shots fired, and he fell to the ground because a bullet pierced his chest, and he died in his mother's arms. And then we watched the temple bombing where the little girls were talking casually, and bombs rang, and the whole church blew up. The third event was Bloody Sunday, and we learned that that was a very violent. The protesters kept it very peaceful, but the authorities wanted to fight back and show them who was boss.
We also watched a movie called The Great Debaters, and it has something to do with what we're talking about today and how there was a lot of police brutality, and they used to beat on black people. When we marched, they wouldn't let us. When we protest, they wouldn't let us. And they would hang people. So it's kind of going back to those days.
Also, in the movie The Great Debaters, the main character's father, they were driving and they hit the man's pig, and they made him get out and put the pig in his car, and they like took all of his money and they embarrassed him in front of his children.
There have been many events where back in the 1960s, that's when the civil rights movement was most popular, but there have been many events where white people have took advantage of some African Americans. Rosa Parks on the bus, and in the sit-ins in the restaurants where African Americans will merely just sit down at a diner, and the people who work there will refuse to give them service because of the color of their skin. And I can name many different events, like the 16th Street bombing of the church, Brown versus the Board.
Also, the Little Rock Nine. I recently read a book in my reading class called Warriors Don't Cry, and it was about Melba. She is a part of Little Rock Nine, and it told her story. And I thought, like, the world came up so much, and it's still not as good as it should be. Like, I cannot imagine what she had to go through. People threw poison into her eyes. People threw rocks and golf balls at her, all because she was black. She cannot control that she is black. She can't control that how smart she was. And for people who don't know, the Little Rock Nine was a series of nine students who attended Central High in Little Rock, Arkansas.
There were problems with, like, people because their skin color, and there was problems in schools. And if you don't know, Brown versus the Board was about Linda Brown was not allowed into her school because of the color of their skin. So the case went to the Supreme Court, and they finally allowed her into school. And, like, that's when a bunch of African Americans started being accepted in other schools. But it wasn't just them being accepted in schools. they were allowed into schools, but there were a lot of backlash from other Caucasian students who didn't want people of other color to be in their school because they felt that that was their place and there was no other people allowed in there. And that's where a lot of, like, things that's happened, like Destiny the Little Rock Nine and, like, other people who got abused or taken advantage of because of the color of their skin. There's like many, many more Caucasian students than maybe just like two black students that were allowed in there. So it was hard for African Americans to fight back, even though if they did fight back, there would be even more problems.
Also, when black students were allowed into the Caucasian schools, it was segregated where the Caucasian students would have, like, cleaner water. And we watched a movie where the excess water from the Caucasian students' water would go into the blacks' water fountains.
They would get their leftover water. So if a Caucasian person was to spit inside their water fountain, that would be the same water that the African-American people would be drinking. So, like, if you're drinking water out of a water fountain, not all the water's going to go in your mouth. So some might, like, spill out or something like that. Yeah, like, spit and stuff. So no matter what Caucasian people might have put in that water, the African-Americans had to drink it.
Also, in the majority black schools, they had worse supplies and stuff. They had, like, the older books, and they weren't up to date with their education.
I recently read a book, and it was called Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry. It was late. It was after slavery. But the lady, she got fired from her job because they had these white kids and they got quote-unquote new books to give to the African-American children. And so they were there and they got the books, and all the books, it had a list of kids' names, their race. They graded the books by how good they looked. All right, and so it was like, I'm just going to give you three things. So it was like, Sally, white, new, and then James, white, good, and then Jack, black, poor. And they got all these poor books where the seams weren't falling off the books, and they were supposed to thank their mayor for giving them these books that weren't even good. And so the teacher, she had a piece of paper because it made the kids mad. So she put a piece of paper in the books, and she was also boycotting the Wallaces, and the Wallaces were a white family that were rich, and they were racist. So she was boycotting their store, and the Wallaces told the mayor about what she did to the books. And so she got fired because of the books, because it was defacing school property, but they actually fired her because of the boycott. Also, this is an issue today where people are just mean for no reason, and people think that they're not hurting anybody, but they are, because people grow up in the world. We're like this generation where we're actually seeing that not everything is black and white, and so we're just in a place where now we can be who we want to be without being judged. We're not there yet, but we can help us get to this point.
And I feel like there is modern-day segregation and discrimination.
Sure.
Like, there's things where our principal had told us, if your middle two numbers of your Social Security number or even, then you're black. And there's, like, little stuff like that that discriminates you.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for supporting Streaming Justice, Music, and Conversation about Civil Rights, past, present, and future in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. Streaming Justice will continue until 11 p.m. at ChooseTheExpress.org.
While I run this race, Jesus called.